Hey, Women of Strength, it's Megan, your host here at the VBAC Link. I am so excited, as usual, to get into our amazing episode today. But before we do, I wanted to share a review of the week from a member of our amazing community about a prenatal that I talk about often on the podcast. It's by Needed. The review reads, "I love the Needed powder that Megan advertises. Pretty reasonably priced compared to other whole food prenatals and makes me feel great. Also love that they use methylfolate instead of folic acid, which is really important to me. Women of Strength, I couldn't have said it better myself. I personally love and use Needed and recommend them to all of my VBAC and non-VBAC clients. We asked Needed for a discount code and are grateful they support VBAC moments as much as we do. Please enjoy 20% off your first purchase at thisisneeded.com. Use code VBAC20. Again, head over to thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com, code VBAC20. Hello, Women of Strength. You guys, we have another story coming from Australia for you today. We just recently had an Australia mama share, and I love our Australia episodes because I cannot get enough of like your guys' accent. I love listening to you guys. So we're so excited. And so we have our friend Lauren. Hello. And we have her little baby.
Yes, little Ren's awake and joining us.
Yes, you guys, it's like 11 o'clock. It's 11 o'clock p.m. there. So she stayed up extra late to record with us today. So we're gonna get into her stories, you guys. She had two C-sections.
Yes, two
C-sections. And then a surprise. And I feel like you really had like very unique. So we had an OB and you were under general. Right,
yes, I think,
and then, you were with midwifery care, and then a surprise, which you're going to be sharing here in a second. So, you guys, I'm really excited to hear her stories. We do have a review of the week, and it's called "So Grateful I Found This Podcast" by Shine for the World to See. It says, after having an emergency C-section last year, I struggled with all these displaced emotions. Here, I was so grateful for my healthy baby, but I found myself feeling hurt, like I had something taken from me, that I struggled finding a safe place to share. And since it felt as if no one around me had ever experienced the same thing I did, this podcast and group of women are my safe place. I am expecting baby number two and am so, so grateful for the empowerment that those stories told here have given me. I am so excited to try for a VBAC this time. And the more I learn here, the more confident I become. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for making this podcast. And you are so welcome. I love this podcast so much. I love all the stories. I love the empowerment, the encouragement, the education. And also, I'm a big person that relates. Like, I love relating. It just makes me feel, I think it brings validation to my heart when I can relate to someone, because like this listener said, like she kind of felt alone, hurting, and like she didn't have anybody else in her space. And this space is so amazing because even if it's a different outcome or there's different parts of the story, there's usually little blurbs of each story that you can truly relate to. So thank you so much for your review, Shine for the World to See. And as always, if you haven't yet, please leave us a review. We are always so grateful for them.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, cute Lauren. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for staying up way late, because by the time we're done recording this, it's going to be midnight. Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh, thank you.
That is okay. I got the time. I was like, oh, it is late, but I was just so excited anyway. So I just can't wait. And I was just with that review, I was thinking the exact same thing. I remember when I found the podcast, I can't even remember. I was trying to think how it popped up, or I didn't even know VBAC was a thing after my first birth. And I just remember listening to it and I was like, it was so much of it resonated and I could relate to it. I was like, little bits. I'm like, it was like I was meant to hear it. I just had that strong feeling when I started listening to the podcast. I'd be crying in the car and it was just so, so powerful. And I just, it definitely was life-changing when I found the podcast.
I feel like there's so many situations where these people, I mean, you've never met them ever in your life. Sometimes we don't even know where they're at, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like they're literally sitting on the phone talking to you.
Speaking to you.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. I felt it. Like I was just like, this is what I'm supposed to be listening at this exact time, because it was just speaking directly to me. And I just, it's so special what you created, because there is a podcast now in Australia for VBAC, but there was never anything before. And I would just eat them up. I'd be waiting every week for the podcast because I would be
Ashley's?
Up to date. There's that one, and there's also I think I've listened to her podcast with you, actually. There's, I think, the Australian VBAC Stories as well.
Awesome.
But they're only maybe like up to eight or ten episodes, so they're quite fresh.
Yay.
I just love all VBAC Stories. I could listen to them always.
Absolutely. Well, let's get going and sharing yours.
Yes. Okay. So my first birth was, I got pregnant in 2017. So we've got three little ones now. So Nate was our first baby. We had private health insurance. A few of our friends had gone private. Some of them had gone public, some cesareans, some natural births. I hadn't really had a plan of what I wanted to do. I always knew I wanted to have children, but I hadn't really given much thought to the pregnancy or labor or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we just signed up with a private OB. Our GP, you get a referral and then you start seeing them from about 16 to 20 weeks. Just had all the regular scans. Everything was really straightforward. We were really fortunate with our pregnancy. We found out we were having a boy. So we found out in January. I had morning sickness probably for the first three months. Then I had a bit of vitamin D deficiency, so I had to take supplements throughout the pregnancy for that. I had a growth scan, I think around 36 weeks, which now I obviously know after doing a lot of research is there's no real need for it, and it's just something to give them ammunition to schedule the big baby. And the scan actually came back, he was measuring fine, so this sort of, I was like, yep, that's good. And I was just, being a first-time mum, was so excited to see him on the ultrasound anyway.
That's what I was gonna say. I feel like they get you, especially for first-time moms, but really in general, like, it's so fun to see
our
baby.
Of course I want
to
see.
They get you there and they're like, well, we'll do this, plus you'll get to see your baby. Well, I haven't seen my baby since 20 weeks, so okay, let's do that.
And you don't know any difference. So you're just that seems fine. And I think we did a little gender reveal and my husband's cousin mentioned something about her friend doing hypnobirthing. And I always remember, I was like, I just wasn't in the right place to hear that at the time. And I'm like, I wish I had have listened then, but it just wasn't meant for me, I don't think, at that time. So I took maternity leave. I had 4 weeks off because I thought, well, from 36 weeks, the baby could really come anytime. And I guess now looking back, I know 40 weeks, it's not even a due date. Like, you can be anytime, anywhere.
Anytime. Estimated. Estimated.
A guest date, I've heard a lot of people refer to. And first-time mums tend to go over the 40 weeks, so it's not uncommon. But I remember it just being such a mind game towards the end when I was getting closer to the due date. I think my OB offered me a stretch and sweep around 38, 39 weeks. And I was like, yep, ready. I'm over it. Anything so we can get the baby. But I didn't even really think about that as being an intervention. I probably didn't even know what the word intervention was at that time. And I do remember her saying to me afterwards something like, "Oh, I hope we're still friends after this," after she did it. And I was like, "Oh, that's a funny thing to say." And then, yeah, I think it was around 39 weeks, and there was nothing. It didn't sort of get anything moving. So I was just automatically booked in for an induction at 40 plus one for post dates, which is not even near post dates. But I was like, "Yep, great." And I think, like you said before, being a first-time mom, just ready to see my baby and over it. So I was like, "Yep, that's great, exciting." So we got booked in. So and I, when I went back through my records, I saw on my induction paperwork it even said small mummy and post dates because I was small apparently. And I was like, "Yeah," because I'm quite short, but I was like, "That's a very so already preempting that I probably wouldn't be able to anyway." So we went in, I think we got admitted about 7 o'clock in the evening, and we got ready for just to do CTG monitoring and just an initial assessment. And when we got in, they said I was having uterine activity, but I couldn't feel anything, but there was so it showing on the monitor I was having some sort of Braxton Hicks or some contractions. And they were concerned that the baby wasn't really reacting very well to that at the time. So they called the OB, who was happy to continue with the induction. And then they did a vaginal assessment. And I think I wasn't obviously at anything. They did another CTG for the fetal heart rate, and it had gone down, I think, to 90 beats per minute. And it had recovered within 2 minutes, change of position, and it had come back to what they were happy with. So then, about an hour after that, they did, I think, intravenous drip in. And they another exam, and I was 1 centimeter, and my cervix was posterior. So I obviously wasn't anywhere sort of near ready. Then I think maybe half an hour after that, there was another decel, and it said with pointless uterine activity. So obviously it wasn't doing anything, but there was some that. And then the OB was asked to come in for that. So obviously the baby wasn't doing very well when I wasn't really even in active labor, and they were a bit concerned with that, thinking he wouldn't be able to tolerate full-blown labor at that point. So then it was 9 o'clock. So 2 after is how we got there. The OB was in the room. They did a ultrasound and were able to determine that I had a calcified placenta and a pocket full of fluid. And there was discussion around maybe booking in for a cesarean just because of the non-reassuring CTG they were having. And I've awfully now remember feeling a sense of relief and being like, "Oh, good. I don't have to go through labor and all of that." Because I think probably admitting to myself, I was a little bit scared about the whole labor because I hadn't done any preparation or any planning. The only sort of anything we'd done, I think, was the antenatal appointment. What's the word? The antenatal class at the hospital where they kind of go through. And even when we left, my husband was like, "That all sounds awful," because it was all just really interventions and how to get the baby out. And he's like, "None of those options sound good." So when they said cesarean, I was like, "Oh, perfect. That'll be great." So then I think about 9:30, we got prepared to go to theater. My husband got in a gown. My mum had actually just arrived into the hospital. So it was all exciting. We were going to meet the baby. And this was at 9:30. And we didn't know at the time, but there was a few alarms going on outside our room. And mum said there was a few people sort of milling around, and we unaware didn't think that was related to us. So we get wheeled out on the bed to go to theater, and then all of a sudden Josh disappears, and they were rushing us to the theater room. And I said, "What's happening?" And I will never forget, I remember that, I think, I don't know who was pushing me, and he said to me, he's like, "I don't think you understand, your baby needs to come out right now." And so we just thought we were going for a normal cesarean, didn't realize it was changed to a general under general anesthetic. So I started getting upset, and I said, "Well, can I just say goodbye to my husband?" So they rushed him back. I quickly kissed him and said goodbye. He gave them his phone, and we went into theater. And I was sobbing at this point because I just didn't know what was happening. There was somebody putting a catheter in. They were putting the general anesthetic in, and then I think my OB popped her head in. It was a At least I sort of knew some sense of calm, and she said, "It's me, I'm here. We're just going to get the baby out." And I remember could see them prepping my stomach under the mirror, and the anaesthetist was lovely. He actually rubbed my cheek and he said, "It's going to be okay. We're just going to get the baby." And then all of a sudden, that's it. That's all I remember. I
You're
was
gone.
gone. And so that I think at the time, I read back on the notes, it was 9:45. It got upgraded to an emergency call, and the baby, he was, I think I went under at 9:50 and he was born at 9:52. So wow. It was very quick. He came out, he cried, he was fine. His apgars were 9, which are like pretty much
that's
perfect.
Pretty great.
Yeah, so fine. And he was, I think he was 3,000 grams, which is 6.8 pounds. And the surgery was complete at 10:05. So super quick in and out. And he went to Josh straight away. So I remember poor Josh was obviously just waiting, didn't know what was happening. They brought Nate out and he said, well, that's great. He's like, but where's Lauren? Like, where is she? So then I didn't meet them, I don't think, into recovery, maybe until about 20 minutes later, which I know is still really fortunate compared to what some people experience really quick. And when I came to, I was still sobbing, I think must have been because I went under crying. Mm-hmm. When I came out, I was all in tears and I just could see Josh sitting next to me on the bed holding Nate. So I think instantly I knew he was okay and he was fine. I was able to hold him and breastfeed him. So I think from then on, everything was really, I was quite lucky. We got him straight away. I think we were in recovery maybe another 20 minutes and then we got taken to the ward. So at the time, I don't think I really registered how full on it was. I had a healthy baby. I was okay. Postpartum was a beautiful experience. We're in the hospital, I think, for 5 days together because we had private. So Josh could stay with us. It was like a second honeymoon. we were in there. It was like a hotel. We were getting food. So that side of it, I think, was just beautiful. And I didn't really feel like I'd missed anything birth-wise at that point. And that was kind of it, I guess, with that. Then in 2019, we started thinking about having another baby, and I hadn't even really thought too much about a VBAC or what I would do. I guess I was like most people where you just once a cesarean, always a cesarean, and that there wasn't another option. Right. And I really wish I could remember how I came across it because I can't remember at all, but I must have found your podcast and I remember listening to it before I was even pregnant. And I was just like, this, I have to try and do this because I never got to experience any labor at all with Nate. And then I think with this pregnancy, I really felt like I missed that. And I wanted to have something. I wanted to go into labor and just at least try and be given the chance. So we were really fortunate and fell pregnant straight away. That was in 2019. And I knew I wasn't going to be doing private obstetrician this time. So I did a bit of research before I was even pregnant, actually, with a public hospital that had a midwifery program attached to it. So you attended all your appointments at a clinic and they had a VBAC specific clinic and then you just birthed at the hospital, which as soon as I found it, but you have to apply straight away. So as soon as I got the positive, I filled out the application form and applied directly with them, got accepted. And I was like, if I'm going to go for it, this is going to give me my best chance to go and have a VBAC. So I can't remember how far along I was, but I still went. The hospital we were going to was half an hour away, but all the appointments with the midwives were only 10 minutes away. So that was really good. And I knew the drive was half an hour, but it was going to be okay. And I also had signed up to do the VBAC course with you guys. So I got my hand out for that and I just ate that up. I loved it. I went through and I was doing that at nighttime. And I also, after listening to the podcast, knew I wanted to do hypnobirthing. So I did hypnobirthing, I think around 7 or 8 months, which was when COVID started to come sort of into the picture. It wasn't around in Australia, but it was sort of happening. So the course was supposed to be a group sort of environment with a few classes. We ended up doing an online course, which is actually really lovely because when Nate was asleep, Josh and I would sit in bed, we'd do all the hypnobirthing courses, listen to the tracks, watch the videos. And then we had one in-house visit and we sort of went through all the positions and acupressure and things like that I wanted for management during birth. So that was really good. And then I think from 37 weeks, I started doing all the things. I was doing raspberry leaf tea, eating all the dates and sitting on the birth ball. So in my head, I felt like I was really getting prepared for the best way possible. And now I know in my third birth, I wasn't as prepared as I probably could have been, but I was still doing more than what I did for my first birth. I had one chiropractic appointment, 38 weeks, to kind of get everything balanced and aligned. I'd never had chiro before, so that was all new to me. And then at 39 weeks, I had an acupuncture appointment. I'd never done acupuncture. Yeah. And I loved that. I thought that was really nice. When they put, I think it was just my hands and my ankles, and then they just put the music on and I just felt so relaxed. And I really loved that. So that was good. And I remember when I went in and I spoke to him, I said, I hope I haven't left it too late. And he said, you're pretty much a first time mum. He said, you've never really had labor. Your body's never been through that. And he did some statistics and he said to me, from 40 to 41 weeks is the average time. So I remember in my head with Nate, when I got to 40 weeks, I thought the baby's going to come any day. So with this pregnancy, I'd pushed it out to 41 weeks. So in my head, that was when my due date was. So I don't know what I would have done if I got to 41 and I hadn't gone into labor, but I had that I was going to 41 weeks. Yeah. So I had an online hospital tour. We couldn't go in to see because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And then I had an OB appointment at 39 weeks. So when you have the midwifery care, you still have to be signed off by an obstetrician in the hospital to kind of give you the okay and run through all the stats and everything. So I was sort of prepared to be up against an uphill battle when I went to that appointment. They were pretty supportive. They kind of just talked about post dates, the risk of rupture and things like that. And I'd sort of said I was comfortable going to 41 weeks and reassess at that then. So I think that was around 39, 40 weeks. And then we were rebooked in for 41 weeks if I hadn't gone in. So then I think I was 40. I'm jumping around a bit. So my due date was a week after Nate's second birthday. So in my head, I just wanted to get to Nate's birthday and then the baby could come after. So we had a little birthday celebration for Nate a few days before I went into labor. So we were happy that was done. Then at 40 plus three in the afternoon, about 4 o'clock, felt like a few little tinges, but obviously I didn't know what anything was. So I was thinking this might be it. This could be prodermal. Was it prodermal labor?
Prodromal.
Mm-hmm. Prodromal. Yep. Braxton Hicks. I just wasn't sure. And I was like, well, in all the podcasts, you don't pay attention to it. I was like, I'm just going to go about what I'm doing, my normal routine with Nate, get a bit of dinner, bath time, and do all those things and not try to focus on it too much, thinking it might either go away or sort of, yeah. And that's what in my head, I'm like, it can take days before. So about 4:30 it started. And then I think at around 7 o'clock, I was getting Nate ready for bed and he was in a cot at this stage. And I remember having to like sort of just take a big sort of breathe in and slowly exhale, like in the hypnobirthing. So I was noticing I'd sort of had to do that as I was putting him to bed. And I remember just being so excited because I was like, oh, this is happening. And my body was doing it naturally. Like I really wanted to try and not have to get induced if I could avoid it. Mm-hmm. So I remember having like, I really sort of focused on my breathing and I was on my knees on the floor, leaning over the bed and just breathing and really sort of trying to relax and listening to my hypnobirthing tracks. And the plan was my mum was going to come over and watch Nate if I went into labor at nighttime. So I think it was around 10 o'clock and I was thinking someone said on one of the podcasts as well to sort of gauge the distance you need to go is how well you're managing. So if it's how long the drive's going to take if you think you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I called my mum to come and I was like, I'm feeling like I'm not struggling, but it was ramping up a little bit. So I was like, I don't know how much longer I can be at home and sit in the car for half an hour to go. So she arrived, we'd call the midwives and we'd let them know we were going into hospital. And my mum came and you could just see she was like, oh gosh, like she had a cesarean. She had me naturally. She had three naturals and then her fourth was a cesarean and she was like, couldn't understand why I was trying for a cesarean because I'd already had one. Why would I not?
Why would you not just do one? Yeah.
So she came and then I remember walking out of my room to the front and I had to stop a few times on the way and stand in the garage and just take a few breaths between each contraction. And I went to go and sit in the car and in my head, I thought I was going to sort of be on my knees leaning over the chair and I just couldn't even fit down in that area. So I was up against the back of the chair and obviously it was nighttime. But I just remember thinking if anybody was driving on the freeway and were looking in, it would have been such a funny sight. So I still had my podcast in and I was really focusing on breathing and Josh was just driving and he'd never been to any of the appointments with me because of COVID. He hadn't been to the hospital. So we were almost there and his nav man was doing funny things. So I had to, in the middle of labor, try and direct him how to get to the hospital. And we pulled up and I just automatically went to where I would park for all of my appointments, which wasn't at the front of the hospital. And I went to get out of the car and I was like, I can't walk to the front of the hospital. So I had to get back in and we drove right to the front. And then we went in, we had to get assessed for the COVID triage, which was a real pain. So we had to wait, do that before we could walk in and get triaged. So I think we arrived at the hospital around 11 o'clock. So we got admitted at 11 o'clock at night and then we were triaged maybe about 11:30. And by that stage, my contractions were every 3 minutes and lasting about 40 to 50 seconds. And I had a vaginal exam and I was four centimeters. And I remember just being so excited because I was already like progressing. I was hoping I would be further along, but I was like, 4 centimeters is good. I was 90% effaced and I had thin and soft cervix. So I was like, oh, that's good. I think by midnight, we'd gone to the labor and delivery suite. They'd dimmed the lights per my request. I'd asked to go in the shower because I really wanted to be in the shower. And they told me I had to wait until my midwife had come from the other, because she wasn't at the hospital.
And checked in, got everything assessed.
So I had to wait for, so that was fine. So I was at that stage, I was sort of leaning on the bed, swaying. Josh was doing a bit of acupressure on my back and I was really enjoying it at that time. My midwife got there at about just before 1 o'clock. I was still kind of coping well through it. By 1:30, I don't think it was my midwife. I think it was one of the hospital midwives came in and assessed me again. And I was at 6 centimeters and I was -2. And there was a little bit of complicated D cells on the CTG. And momentarily my head was like, oh, not again. Like I didn't want, but it evened out and it was okay. So I think it was just must have been a bad reading because the bulky monitors that they have to put on, they didn't have the mobile ones. It was all over the sort of the bands that you had to sort of be attached to monitoring. They suggested to artificially break my waters. And I hadn't really thought too much about that in my prep. I think I just focused on going into labor naturally as opposed to actually being in labor. Mm-hmm. So they asked to break my waters and I had gas for that. And I remember getting on the bed to do that, which I think was one of my first bad things to do, because then I never got off the bed. Once I got on there to do that, I couldn't manage to get back off. And I wish I had known or asked to be helped to get taken off, but I was just not in the position to be able
just
to get
ended
off
up
the bed
keeping
and
you there.
Stuck sort of there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't remember this, but when I went in my notes, they offered me a cesarean at that point. And I was like, no, I'm trying for a VBAC. So they said, that's okay. We tried repositioning some fluids and then the CTG was sort of back to where they were happy with. Then about half an hour later, I was on my side and I felt a bit of pressure and my sound changed a little bit. And I remember my midwife saying to me, she's like, oh, Lauren, that sounded a bit pushy. And I was like, it felt a bit pushy. So I was like, oh, that was really exciting. And then that was at 2 o'clock. And then at 2:30 in the morning, they assessed me and I was fully dilated.
Yay.
And I was just so, so excited. And they were seeing some complicated D cells on the monitor. I think they said, do you know what this normal heart rate is for it? Because I've written them all down, but they were saying it was 140 without a contraction. And then they'd asked the register to come in the room. So the register came in to see, I guess, what the CTG was doing and my progress and for pushing. And then I had a bit of a funny moment. When I was doing the pushing, I was on gas and I must have taken a big inhale of the gas and all my vision went dark and I couldn't see anything. And I remember getting a bit scared at that point because I didn't know what was happening. I could hear everything and I could feel everything, but I just couldn't see. And they think it was just from inhaling the gas and the contraction and all the something. It was
It just was like too much all at
too
once.
Too much. Yeah, it was okay. Really scary, but it was a once off and it was fine after that. And then I think at 2:40, they had the PED was paged to come in to attend delivery. So I think at this stage, they still thought things were happening and we were going to have a baby vaginally. At 5 minutes later, they gave me a indwelling catheter to drain my bladder in case that was sort of creating a blockage for the baby to come down.
Which is actually something that does happen.
Yes.
If the baby is not coming down, sometimes it's urine blocking.
Yes, so they said only 50 mils came out. So there wasn't a lot, but I was like, well, that was good. At least they tried that. And they said the position, they registered, did a VE and said that I can never pronounce this, but it was ROA. So right occiput posterior position. So not in a great position and at my spine. And they said there was some descent with the pushing, but just not sort of enough. So then I think that's when they decided to call to be transferred to theatre. So the plan was to have a spinal and try for some instrumental assistance to get the baby out. And I think at that point, it was quite quick. It was quite intense and I was relieved. I didn't think I had it in me to sort of push anymore. So I agreed to go up to theatre and have forceps or manual rotation to help assist the baby out. So we got up to the, and I think that was, they called them maybe 2:40 and we got to theater about 3:20. So it wasn't that long of a wait, but it felt like eternity when my body was contracting and pushing and they were telling me not to push and just to pant through the contractions. And I just remember it felt like a really long time. And I'll never forget, we got to theater and I had to sit up on the edge of the bed and the person trying to put my spinal in asked me just to scoot up the bed. And I was sitting there mid-contraction. I just remember looking at my midwife and I was like, you just have to like to wait till I'm after this contraction and then I can just move up for the spinal. So I got the spinal and they discussed the options of an episiotomy and use a forceps to sort of aid the baby. And I, at that stage, I was like, yep, whatever we need to do, I really would like to try to get him out. So they tried a manual rotation whilst pushing and his heart rate dropped to 93. They assessed the position and then maybe decided to do the forceps. So they must have said that and then changed to apply a vacuum because then they did a vacuum and they went to do it the first pull and his heart rate dropped to 67. They did another pull and his heart rate was up at 133. Then a couple of minutes later, they decided to do forceps. They attempted to do the forceps. They applied them and his heart rate dropped to 86. Then they reapplied, but to get them a better position around his head and his heart rate again dropped to 75. And the baby, even though he had changed position and was now facing, I think his head was facing my back, which is OA? And he was in a negative one station. They obviously thought he was just not in a great enough position for them to aid him out. So they decided to convert to a cesarean. And I remember at that point, like I didn't feel like it was a failure or I hadn't done it because they had given me every opportunity to try. And I still got to experience so much more than I had with my first birth. And even though I still didn't end up with a vaginal birth, I got 95% of the way. And I was still so happy and proud of my body for getting to that point. Yeah. And I was just like, if they couldn't even get him out with forceps, there was no way I was going to be able to do it. So I was quite happy and content with the decision. And they did sort of say he had been down there quite a bit, so he might come out not great. And because he was so far down, they did have to and they did write the word extract him, which I thought was quite an interesting term to use, but the extraction was breached because he was so far already down. Yeah. And he came out, his Apgar was 8 and 9. He was 7.4 pounds and similar size in length to my first. And then I think we were there maybe for an hour or two in recovery. He fed straight away and then we returned to the ward. And on my notes, it said repeat C-section due to failed Toll-like. And I was just like, I hate that word that it's a fail. But anyway, I understand that's the terminology they use. And then it says about an hour later, we had a debrief. They came back into the room and sort of went through all the happenings and made sure I was okay with it all. And they actually discussed any future deliveries and the recommendation for elective cesareans. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember that conversation, Arnie.
Oh, really?
I don't even remember. So when I went back through my notes, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then in the notes, it also says CPD ? And which I realize I can't pronounce that word either. Cephalopelvic
Pelvic disproportion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And small Yeah, so they said that. And then they also said there was a small extension to the upper midline of my cesarean incision. So I had my normal scar and then it obviously had come apart further up and it said that it was sutured separately on the uterus. And that I'm obviously reading it in real time now, but I didn't realize that until my recent birth when we went back through my notes with my midwife. So I was like, well, that's really interesting. They obviously told me, but I just must not have registered that at the time. And then obviously we were in hospital due to COVID. So Josh wasn't allowed to stay with us. So about an hour after his birth, he had to leave. And being a cesarean, I was in hospital for a few days and my other son, Nate, wasn't able to come in to visit us. So I really missed out on, I guess, us being a family of four for those first few days. So we got home. I think I was in there for two nights and then we got discharged and they met us at the hospital and that drive home was actually really special. That was the first time they met when we were in the car driving home.
I'm going to take a quick break from our episode and continue talking about our favorite prenatal line, Needed. Needed was created by two mothers and trained nutritionists who knew a better way of nurturing our bodies was needed. Nutrition is so important and has the power to change outcomes for both mamas and babies during conception, pregnancy, and beyond. They found that 95% of women in the prenatal stages have nutrient deficiencies. Most prenatal vitamins include the bare minimum nutrition based on outdated guidelines and stale research. Needed is different. They have done years of research to find out what we really need during our journeys and have done exactly that. Their products are third-party tested, backed by clinical insights from over 4,000 practitioners, and they are so thoughtful about every ingredient, using exactly what's needed in the bioavailable forms. And this is important because you and your baby deserve the best. Don't be one of the 95% of women who are not getting what they truly need in a prenatal vitamin. Consider taking or even switching to Needed and feel confident that you will be receiving radically better nutrition. As I mentioned earlier, we asked Needed for a discount code and are grateful they support our VBAC mamas as much as we do. Please enjoy 20% off your first purchase at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. Again, that is thisisneeded.com to get 20% off with code VBAC20.
And we always knew we wanted a third, but it was a lot, the transition to two, and we probably weren't ready straight away. We gave it maybe about 2 years, and then when Cole was two, we decided we'd try again for baby number three, and we fell pregnant really quickly with the first two, so we just assumed that would happen this time, and we're trying for a few months, and it just didn't really happen, and we sort of were trying for 6 months, gave ourselves a bit of a breather, and just sort of let it take its natural course because we took the pressure off. And then as I was saying before, the boys were both born a week apart in May and we found out we were pregnant with our third bang in between the middle of their birthdays. So
which
was really special. May's always been a special month, but it was, yes, we had Nate's birthday, found out I was pregnant. And then a few days later we had Cole's birthday. So it was a real, real sort of special timing. And then probably not straight away, but I sort of knew I wanted to try again. It would be our last baby. If I was going to have a natural birth, it would be this pregnancy. So I went to go through the same model of care that I was with Cole, but they had changed their practice. So the midwife group that I went did no longer existed. So it's called midwifery. It was the MGP, so midwifery group practice. They were based in the hospital this time. So all my appointments were at the hospital and they were VBAC supportive. So And then you still have to have your OB appointments around 36 weeks. And we didn't find out our gender with this one. So we had the two boys and for our third, we weren't going to find out what we were having. I had the same sort of morning sickness with my third. I was a lot sicker this time. And I knew this time I was going to have a student midwife and a doula. So obviously the VBAC community group on Facebook. I posted in there and I also posted, there's a Western Australia VBAC support group. So I posted in there for recommendations for student midwives and doulas. And then I spoke to a few of them, and I obviously, whoever I felt close, like that connection with, I went with them. And I just, the doula, I did research doulas with Cole, but I don't know why I didn't do it that time. And I think that would have made a difference. But I was like, this is the time I'm going to do it, and I'm going to have a doula. So we did that. I did a bit of a refresher for the hypnobirthing as well. I met my doula at about 25 weeks, and we met at a park, and we just chatted for hours. And she had a VBAC as well herself.
So that's awesome.
And her second was a home birth and a surprise as well. So she had a boy, and then she had a surprise for her girl. And just so much was similar with our situations. I just felt like she was meant to be our doula. And yeah, so that was at 25 weeks. And I think, so at 6 months, we had a suggestion of a fetal growth scan again, which was the same. And I was like, they were already preempting that, but I was more prepared. Even if I went to that scan and it was a big baby, that I would be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And then at 28 weeks, I did the normal blood tests and the fasting for gestational diabetes. And I didn't have it with the two boys, and I had it this time around. So that was a bit of a surprise. So I didn't really know much about gestational diabetes. You have to do your 3 blood sugars after your fasting. And I was, the third one had to be under 8.5, and I was 8.5. So I was just on the cusp. And I remember my midwife saying to me, she goes, who knows, if you had have waited another 10, 15 minutes before your blood test, you probably would have been fine. So
yeah, it could have been lower.
And then I started snowballing all of the things. I said, oh, it's just going to mean they induce because they produce bigger babies, and I didn't want to be induced. And I'd gone to 40 weeks with the boys, so I didn't assume I'd be having any like an early labor. So I just started really worrying about my chances of having a VBAC at that point. And I did a lot of research and listened to podcasts with people that had gestational diabetes and tried to get in a good headspace again. And I just ended up taking it as a positive to eat healthier and watch what I was weight gain and things like that this pregnancy. So I had to check my blood sugar 4 times a day after fasting in the morning, first thing when you wake up, and then every 2 hours after a meal. And I was able to manage it with just my diet, which was really good. So I didn't have to have insulin.
That's awesome.
Really good. And then the diabetes, they would check in with me, and I could change to every alternate day testing. So thankfully I was able to manage it from that side, but it just meant there was increased monitoring, I guess, on the growth of the baby and my weight and things like that. And I also had low iron, which I never had with my first 2 pregnancies. So this pregnancy was just a real curveball, I guess, from the start. And yeah, so then at 29 weeks, I went in for my next appointment, checked diabetes, everything was still fine. My youngest tested positive to COVID. So that was a little bit of an interesting one. None of us got it, which was actually really lucky. So I didn't know how I would go being pregnant and getting COVID. And I had noticed I'd started to lose a bit of my mucus plug, which I'd never experienced before. And it was quite early, but my midwife said, that's fine. She said, it doesn't mean anything. It can happen. It builds back up again. But I was like, that's a bit different. And that was exciting. And then I think at about 32 weeks was my appointment with my midwife. And that was when we went through all my previous births, just as a debrief. And that was a bit of an eye opener, because I think those things that we highlighted in Cole's birth weren't really brought to my attention until this one. And you could see as my midwife was reading it that she wasn't really aware of that either. In the notes, it just said there was a sign of obstruction, loss of station between the manual and the vacuum rotation, inability to place the forceps, and understanding of why the labor was abandoned as a vaginal birth. And then it says that a VBAC was not recommended, that the midwives would still support me if I wanted to try for a VBAC after 2. And if I wanted an elective, they would be able to be support with that. And I remember leaving there feeling so disheartened, and it was only 4 weeks away from my due date. And I just came home, and I remember Josh and I talking it all over, and I was like, is it worth going through all of that again just to get to that point of pushing and not being able to fit through my pelvis and being a scary C-section again? And we sort of went through all of our options, and Josh was happy to sort of just support what I wanted. But I was so torn. I didn't know but I kept coming back to a VBAC. Like I just didn't feel content with a cesarean. I just thought, I'll never know if I didn't try. And I just sort of spoke to my doula, and I was just frazzled. My head was all over the place. And I remember I had a good chat with her over the phone, and she said, she was stuck with me, and she said, different baby, different birth.
Absolutely.
And I just kept saying that to myself. And there was a pod, I think I listened to one of the VBAC Link podcasts, and they said the same thing. And I was like, it was the right affirmation that I needed to listen to at the time. And the whole CPD with the pelvis, she said, Lauren, she goes, you don't even have an official diagnosis. She said, that's just somebody's opinion as what they're saying as to why the baby didn't descend. She goes, he just wasn't in a great position. And she's highlighted that they broke my waters at 6 centimeters before he was even descended. Which maybe led to him being even more stuck. So all of these things. And then I remember just trying to focus on positive VBAC stories and get my head right in the right space. So I was listening to lots of podcasts at that point, and I was following a lot of Instagram pages about pelvic mobility. And I didn't really do a lot of research about that with my first or my second pregnancy, about your pelvic inlet, your pelvic outlet, internal and external rotation. Like this was all news to me, and I really, really enjoyed that. And it made so much sense that the pelvic's not rigid, it can move. And I just kept visualizing that when I was trying to be positive towards this labor. And I was doing a lot of exercises, only a couple of minutes a night before bed. I'd be doing a lot of the window wipers where you just sort of lay back and rotate your knees from side to side, deep squats in the showers, doing a lot of lunges, just creating as much space and room that I felt like I could in my pelvis. And I did a lot of
visualization.
And I remember I just kept putting my hand between my legs and imagining feeling my baby's head. And I don't know why I did that. And it probably might seem a bit strange, but I just really felt that. And I was imagining going through labor and having that moment. And so that was really quite, I think, powerful at that point to get back on the right track for having a VBAC. There was two other podcasts I was listening to, which are Australian based, The Great Birth Rebellion, and that's really, really good, and The Midwife's Cauldron. And they just sort of question a lot of things that are just expected or standard and not to question. And I thought they were really good. So, and then one of the ladies that do The Midwife's Cauldron, she's got a book called Reclaiming Childbirth as a Rite of Passage. And that was an incredible, I didn't get all the way through it, but it was another thing like finding your podcast. It just really resonated with me, and everything I read, I felt like it was meant for me. And I just, it was really, really powerful. And the two Instagram pages that I followed was the Body Ready Method. And they have just little reels of exercises and things to do to get your body ready. Then I got to 35 weeks. We went through my last appointment, and that I was happy to still go ahead with a VBAC and that they would support me. Advised of the standard guidelines of having an IV, CTG monitoring, and regular vagina examinations. 36 weeks, I had my OB appointment, and I had my growth scan, and the baby was in the 90th percentile, which I thought I was going to have to sort of say, well, I know they can be inaccurate and it's 500 grams. But the OB wasn't worried about that at all. And he said, yep, baby's fat size is fine. Discussed pros and cons. He pulled out graphs and figures, and I was like, oh gosh, here we go. Like, he's going to tell me all these problems. And he was so pro VBAC and supportive.
Awesome.
He was from the UK, and he said, I came to Australia and I didn't realize what the problem with VBAC is. He goes, they're so supportive in the UK with VBAC. And the hospital I was going to has a 60% success rate with VBACs, which I was like, well, that's pretty positive. He asked, I did my GBS screening, and then he rebooked me in for 39 weeks. And I'll never forget, he said to me, well, I'll see you at 39 weeks if you're still pregnant. And in my head, I was like, well, of course I'm going to be pregnant, because I went for 40 weeks with the boys. So we'll see you at 39 weeks and reassess. But I was really, because you don't have a set obstetrician either, so you get whichever one's there. So I was really hoping he would be at my next appointment and when I went into labor. So then at about 37 weeks, we went on a little holiday down south. It was a big drive. We came back. I was having regular chiropractic appointments, I should say. And I had my chiropractic appointment when I got back. I'd just been sitting in the car and she mentioned that the baby was sitting asynclitic, which is head tilted.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh no, I was so focused on getting the baby being in a good position. And she said, it's probably just because you were sitting for such a long time on the drive. She goes, it's not a concern. She realigned me and then just gave me a few pelvic tilt sort of exercises to do to get in the right spot. And then on the 14th of Jan, which was around 37, just before 38 weeks, we had a meetup with my doula again, just pre-birth, run through everything. She got to meet Josh and we just left feeling really positive and excited and happy, and she was on call. And then I'd got to 38 weeks. So I had an appointment on the Thursday with my chiro, and then on the Friday I was working from home. I still had another week. I was sitting on the exercise ball pretty much all day, doing lots of circles, pelvic tilts. I had maybe one or two twinges and I was like, oh, that's interesting. But then nothing eventuated from that, nothing through the night. So I didn't really read too much into it. The next morning, which was the 20th of January, which was 38 plus two, Josh had to go to, my husband had to go down south for work, which was a 3-hour drive away. And a lot of people were like, oh, that's a bit dangerous. And I was like, oh, no, I'd rather him go now and be back for my due date in hindsight. But we said that I'd rather you go now and then be around for 40 weeks. So he headed off first thing Saturday morning, did the drive, did a full day's worth of work, just was a normal day. About 4:30 in the afternoon, I got two boys in the car. We went to the shops. I had to do a bit of shopping for a birthday party the next day. Then at 5 o'clock, I'd go on to our local. I do click and collect. I don't know if you have that, but you do your grocery shopping. You pull up, they just put it in your boot, and then you drive home.
Oh, so, we do have that. Yeah. Grocery pickup is what we call it. Yeah.
Yeah. So they came out from COVID, and I just haven't stopped doing it. It's so handy with children. So that was at 5 o'clock. We did that. We got home. About 7 o'clock, the boys getting the boys ready for bed. They were in the bath. I was just tidying up a few things, and I squatted down to pick a few things up, and I had a bit of a leak, and I was like, I just felt like I'd wet myself a little bit, but not a gush, not anything. Yeah. I had a pad on, so it was just a little bit of water, and I called Josh and I said, I don't know if this is anything. I said, but maybe just have an early night. Like if things do start to happen, you might have to drive home in the morning to sort of get back. So this was about 7 o'clock, and then at about 7:15, I sent a photo to my friends because they were out and I was just at home, and I'd bought a special birthing robe on, and I just for some reason put it on that night, and I was sitting on the couch in my birthing robe, and I took a photo and sent it to them, completely oblivious of what was about to unfold. So I got the boys in their pajamas and brushed their teeth and were getting ready for bed, and it was about just before 8 o'clock, and I had a little bit of a cramp, and I was like, oh. So I noted it down, which was really weird because my previous birth, I didn't notice the contractions or take note of them for a long time. But 7:55 was my first contraction.
Mm-hmm.
And then 8:10 was my next one. And I was like, oh, that's weird. It's only like 15 minutes after that one. Then the next one came 5 minutes after. I was like, that's weird. And then the next one was 4 minutes. And I was like, well, that's weird. So I stopped writing them down. I was like, obviously I'm not writing him down properly. I must be doing something wrong because that just can't be right. And during that, I must have gone to the toilet, and there was a slight tinge of red sort of in the bowl. And I remember taking a photo of it being like, that's a bit, I'll just keep
like
it.
Some like some bloody shell.
Yeah, not a lot, like a really faint in the water. Like took a photo of it because I wasn't even sure if it was there.
Yeah.
So, and then at about 8:20, I called Josh again and said, maybe start heading back because things might be happening. I was like, the contractions don't seem like they're slowing down, but we'll just see what happens like in the next few hours, but maybe just it's 3 hours. So maybe just sort of head back. I called my mum at that point as well, and she was an hour up north. She never goes up there, but she'd just gone for a day trip. So she was away as well. And at that point, the boys were still awake and I couldn't get them. I wasn't capable of getting them into bed and doing all that. So I said, just pop on the couch. And they were watching Bluey, which is a TV show that they love. So they had that on and they were watching that. And I thought I'd just hop in the shower. Oh, must have been 8:30 at that time. Sorry. And I called Megan, my doula. So the plan was I was going to labor at home for as long as possible. And she was just going to meet us at the hospital. So I called her and I just said, Josh isn't here. My mum's not here. I'm alone with my boys. I'm going to try and put them to bed and focus and get in to my breathing techniques, and then I'll check in and touch base with how I'm going. So that was about 8:30. So about 10, 15 minutes after than that, I hopped in the shower and things started to ramp up quite a bit. And I was like really upset because I was in the shower thinking that that would be my mode of pain relief, and it just was not.
Or slow it down.
I was like, I've heard that as well. I was like, you hop in the shower, it'll slow it down, and it won't. It was not the real thing. And it did nothing. And I was like, oh no, this is not good. And I remember thinking to myself, I just need to press pause. Like, I just need to stop this because I can't, this can't be happening right now because I'm literally on my own.
Are not there. Yeah.
I'm on my own. This is just not how it was supposed to happen. So I was in the shower, and then I had a little bit of a bloody show at that point in the shower. And at that point I called my doula again. I was like, I think you need to come over. I was like, I just need a little bit of support just to watch the boys. And in my head, I still was thinking I had hours to go. In my head, I was like, if you could just watch the boys until Josh gets here, then you can head home, and then we'll give you a call when we head into hospital. So at that point, I got out of the shower because it wasn't doing anything, and I had started to fit the contractions felt a bit different. It felt like I was sort of having to bear down a little bit. Oh. And I was like, yeah, I was like, okay. But I still feel like I was oblivious because it was so quick. In my head, it wasn't happening that fast. Yeah, right. So I remember thinking, oh God, when I get to the hospital, I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this all night. I'm going to need to get the epidural because I can't, it's too much. So I got out of the shower, and Megan had given me a TENS machine. So I was like, that's in the bedroom. I'll get my TENS machine. And I couldn't even make it to my bedroom to get my TENS machine. I was like, oh goodness. So I put a nappy on, and then I went and I sat down. I think I must have made it to the toilet. So then I'd sat back on the toilet, and that was a really comfortable, familiar place that I sort of was sitting, and I was sitting down there, and that was really nice for the sort of the contractions to sort of breathe through. And that my boys, they wouldn't have known what was going on. They kept coming in and checking and asking if I was okay. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, mummy's fine. I was like, I think the baby's coming. So I think they knew something was going on, because obviously I was making some deep breathing noises at this point. My eldest was a little bit scared, but he was okay. And then I was sitting on the toilet, and I remembered I'd locked the whole house up. So we've got a side gate, a security door, and a front door. And I thought, oh my God, like when Megan arrives, she's not even going to be able to get in. So I don't know. Nate found the keys for me, and he gave them to me, and he was so happy with himself. So he gave me the keys, and I managed through contractions to walk. It was probably 5 meters to the front door, and I only had a nappy on at this point. I was completely naked because I just got out of the shower and had a nappy on. I'd unlocked both the doors and walked down like it's a little sort of a little side area, and I was like, goodness, if anybody walks past and hears me or sees me unlocking this gate, they're just going to. Thankfully, it was late and nobody saw it, but I still don't know how I managed to do that. But I got back in, and I was back on the toilet, and I think that was around maybe 8:50 at that point. When I'd moved to the toilet, the light was off in the toilet, and for the hospital bag, I'd packed lots of candles and LED lights to have to set the mood. And in the boys' bathroom, I have one candle on, which is just for their night light if they need to go to the toilet. So that was the little nightlight that I had on in the toilet. So that actually was quite nice to have a dark room with a little candle sort of on. And I think at this point it was about, I unlocked the door at about 9 o'clock, and then it was 9:23 that my doula arrived. So she came in, and my eldest son, Nate, I remember him running to the door, and he was just so excited that somebody was there to help mum. So he's like,
please come in.
Mum's there. She's in the toilet. And I remember Megan coming in, and she was so calm and she was so relaxed, and she just looked at me and she said, Lauren, are you pushing? I remember looking at her, and I was like, I think I'm pushing. And she just said, okay. She said, I'm just going to call the ambulance. And she was on the phone, and she was calling. And I think in my head at this point, I still hadn't registered it was that sudden. Like, I still just thought I was, and I.
So this has been like maybe 2 hours.
It, 2 hours. So you can push for hours. So in my head, I was like, I'm like, we've still got hours. We're fine. So it was intense, but I was just so excited. Like, things were happening, and it was all going. So then she said, I don't know how we got to it, but we called my neighbor to come over because obviously my midwife was, I mean, my doula was, she was trying to support me, but then the boys were there and she said, I just need somebody else to watch the boys. So my beautiful neighbor came over and we're friendly, but not like in the middle of birth, naked friendly. So she comes and the toilet's off the hallway. So I remember her walking in and she's like, hi. And I was like, sorry, Adrian. And I was there pushing and she's walking up the hallway to sit with the boys on the couch whilst I was about to have a baby. And she was, it was so crazy. So yes, I think that was just about 9:30 and Megan gave me some water and she was rubbing my back and she put a cold towel on my back and my legs, I was still sitting on the toilet at this point and my legs were quite shaky and I just felt a bit sweaty. And then I instinctively just got up to move to sit on my knees in the toilet. And our toilet's not very big. Like you can put your arms up and hold the walls. So I was on there on my knees and I had one leg up and I was sort of rocking, circling my hips. And I was doing all the things and like just instinctively, I didn't really notice that I was doing them. And then I think she had towels and she had pillows. She was still on the phone to the ambulance that were coming. And I'll never forget the guy on the phone. He just was like, put her on her back. She needs to be, can you get her on her back? You need to be able to see. And they were asking her to tell her when I was having contractions. And I remember we were looking at each other and I'm like, he can hear like when I'm having a contraction, like I would start to make the noises. And Megan would just be like, now, like you could tell she's having a contraction now. Like now. It was so obvious. She was like, obviously he just had a script to read off, but she was just like, it was so, so obvious when I was contracting and when I was not. And so the head still wasn't there, but I could feel like sort of bulging. Mm-hmm. And I remember kept putting my hand down there and I was just so excited and happy. And I was just so calm. Like I don't know how, because none of it was planned. It was happening so quick. I guess there was no time to really process it or even think about it or get scared about it. It was just happening. So there was two paramedics that arrived and this was just before 10 o'clock at this point. So I was there, I could feel bulging, but there was still no head or anything yet. And they came in and they turned the light on in the toilet. And I was like, oh no, like it was too bright. So they turned it off. They looked at me and they said, Lauren, are you okay? Do you need anything? And I was just, I don't even know if I could speak. I just shook my head. I was like, no,
I'm okay.
Like we can't, in hindsight, we couldn't have gone. It was too late. We couldn't have gone anywhere anyway, but they just stood back and they turned the light off and they literally just watched, which was so special. They didn't interfere. They didn't try to take over or just, they just sort of let me go. And I don't know how it happened, but my midwife, the doula gave the paramedics my phone and they recorded the birth.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, which was not planned. So I guess it was so special because Josh, he was still an hour away.
And your mom
going to see it. Mom wasn't there. Yeah. So I'm like, at least they can see it. But I'm so glad that they thought to do that, to record it.
Yes.
So they were recording it and I was getting close and I remember in the video you can hear me say, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Like, and obviously I was very, very close and I put my hand down and I was just saying, ow, 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 because I could feel the stretch. And I know people call it the ring of fire, but I tried not to think of it like that. I tried to visualize just the stretching of the everything. So and then I could feel the baby's head. And then I just remember sobbing because I was so happy and I could feel, and I was saying, oh, 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 oh. And then her head, I didn't know it was her at the time, but her head just sort of popped out through one contraction. And you could just see my relief. I was so happy. And she cried. So her head was out and she made two little cries.
She did.
Before her show. And I've never heard of that happening before. So
I have never seen that. Ever.
It was incredible. Even the doula was like, what in the world? And I just knew she was fine at that stage. I just heard the cries. And then it was maybe about a minute before the next contraction. And then I was like, she's coming out. So the doula, she had her hand under, she sort of guided her head to me and then her shoulders. And then I just pulled her up to me. And it was just, the look on my face, I just could not believe it. Like, I'd done it. I just kept saying, oh my God. And I just held her. I keep saying her, but I held the baby. And I could not believe that she had come out just so quickly and so easily. And I was so worried in the lead up that the baby would get stuck. I wouldn't be able to get the baby out. And none of that was even in my mind at the point. Like, she just was there and I was just holding her, and it was just the most incredible, special moment. And even now, even when I hold the top of her head, like, I always remember feeling her head coming out. And I don't even know if I'm doing it justice, because it was just the most incredible feeling. And I was holding her, and our neighbor brought the boys down. So within the first minute, she's walking down the hallway and she had Nate and Cole, and they were both just in the doorway of the toilet looking at me, holding their little baby. And that my youngest looked in and was like, no, he just walked away. It was all a bit much for him. And then my eldest, he walked straight in, like, there was stuff was everywhere, and he was so brave. He walked straight in, and I was like, oh, mum, you had the baby. The baby's here. And I said to him, I said, we don't know what it is. I said, do you want to have a look and see if it's a boy or a girl? So he sort of looked down, and I said, is there a vagina or a willy? And he looked down, and the whole time he said he thought she was going to be a girl. And he goes, I think it's a girl. And he looked down, and I don't know what he saw, but he said, it's a boy. So I was like, is it another boy? So he must have seen something that he thought looked like a willy. Or
maybe like the balls, an umbilical cord, maybe.
Cord or the swollen. I didn't realize, but they get quite swollen. So he might have thought it looked like their little testes. Yes. So he said, it's a boy. And then Megan whispered something in his ear. And in that split second, I was just like, oh my gosh, like, it's not a boy. I was like, is it a girl? And I was just, I couldn't believe it. The fact that she was such a surprise, her birth, the way she came, and then that she was a boy, I mean, that she was a girl as well. And then we were just sitting there in the toilet for so long. And then we were like, oh, we better call Josh. So Megan was like, I'll call Josh. And she said, you need to pull over, Josh. Can you pull over? And he was on the highway doing 110 to get back to us.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, okay. So we FaceTimed him, and I'm just sitting on the floor holding Ren on the floor of the toilet saying, she's here. Like, we've had the baby. And he was so happy. And then he was still an hour away. My mom, I think we just sat in the toilet for ages. My mum arrived 20 minutes after she was born, and she just came and sat on the floor of the toilet with me, and we just sat in there, and we were just, she couldn't believe it. And then about maybe 40 minutes after, we walked up and I was able to sit in my own bed, and I sat in the bed. They were sort of a bit worried about the placenta and things like that. I hadn't birthed the placenta yet. They asked if I wanted to cut the cord, and I was like, well, I would just like to leave it as long as possible till it sort of goes white. And then we were hoping for Josh to come at that point. So then I was sitting down, and I stood up for a little bit. And I remember my mum was in the bed with me, and my doula was there. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I need to do a number two. And she was like, no, I think that's your placenta.
Probably your placenta sitting in there.
So the placenta just came straight out, and she caught it in one of my mixing bowls because we didn't have anything prepared. So I had that, and she just sort of stayed attached to that for a while. Because I had gestational diabetes, they had to do a heel prick on Ren. Mm. So they tested her. Her sugars were fine. Josh was still about an hour away. So we didn't even have a capsule at this point for the car, because I still thought I had 2 weeks to pick up the capsule. So we got transferred because she came so early. We got transferred to the hospital in the ambulance, and Josh met us there at 12:30. So I should say she was born at 10:09. She was born which was just pretty much 2 hours after.
So 7:40 something to 10:09.
10:09, which is just great. And I remember the midwives, when we got to the hospital, were like, why didn't you know? And I was like, because I just had no idea that it was happening that suddenly. Like, now looking back, obviously all the signs were there, but it wasn't happening that quickly in my head. Yeah. So we got to the hospital, and Josh got to meet us at the entrance when we got wheeled in. And it was so special. I just still could not believe that it had happened. And I was just on such this high, and I was just so incredibly happy. And we went in and they just didn't know what to do with us. They didn't know to put us in labor and delivery or to take us to the maternity ward. So we went to labor and delivery. They did all the assessments and she was my biggest baby. So she was 7.8 pounds. So 3.5 kilos compared to the boys. So it's quite funny that Cole wasn't able to come out, but she was able to come out. But I think it was just a
positional issue.
And I was relaxed. I was at home. I didn't have any interventions, anything, which I think played a huge part in it. And they did an assessment on her APGAR. I think her APGARs were in the hospital, but she was 10 and 10. So she was perfect. They did assess me for a tear. And I remember saying to her, I was like, oh, I don't think I teared. Because in my head, if I had have torn, I thought it would have been a really painful feeling. I actually had a second degree tear, which I didn't realize. So I had to have some local anesthetic, which was probably the most painful part of it all. It was excruciating. So I had to have stitches for that and then just a superficial tear up the top. And Josh actually went home at that point because we still had a few hours before we could get discharged. He'd driven 3 hours in the morning, worked a whole day, driven 3 hours, hadn't been asleep for like 24 hours. So I said, you go to your parents, have a quick sleep. Then he came back. Ren, they did a few checks on Ren. She had to go to the special care nursery just for some monitoring really quickly because there was a preductal difference on some of her monitoring, so just her heart rate. So they just did an echo, which came back fine. There was no follow-up, so it just must have been a funny reading. They were all fine. So then I think we got discharged about 9 o'clock the next morning. So she was born 10 o'clock at night. We went to hospital midnight, left there at 9 in the morning, and were back home that literally within a few hours with the boys. And it was just so surreal and so special compared to the other two births experiences that I'd had. Just one, to be able to get up and to walk around and just do things without being conscious of a scar and recovery and things like that. And even when I walked in home, because my mum had stayed at home with the two boys, she said, you don't even look like you just had a baby. And I just felt like I was on top of the world. Like it was just such a different experience. And I remember saying to her, I was like, I can't, obviously I didn't know what that was going to be like, but I just, now that I've experienced it, I can't imagine going through life never having experienced that and having her that way. Like it was just, and yeah, it was just so, I remember a few of the midwives, I think, looked at me as if I had planned to have a home birth. And I was like, absolutely. Like there is no way I would have planned it like that with no support, with nobody here.
Yeah. You're like, I would not have planned to do that.
And my boys, they didn't know anything about natural birth. I was going to the hospital to have a baby and coming back with their baby brother or sister. There was no way that I was. So that was a bit, it was just funny. I was like, no, it was not planned. It was all very, very sudden. And I remember my doula said to me, I think in the coming days after Ren was born, she was just like, how special for Ren to have been born that way. And then also for your boys to just say that their sister was born at home and that it wasn't a scary experience. It can be calm and it can be peaceful and it can be special. And it didn't have to be some scary thing. And I remember that it's so funny, the people that I would tell the story to after, they would be like, you could tell people's reactions about their views on birth and they'd be like, oh, like how traumatic for you, that would have been so scary. And I was like, that was the least traumatic birth out of the two. Like it was so beautiful. Like it was everything and more that I ever could have dreamed of. Like I wanted to try for a natural birth. And I remember saying to Megan, I was like, I had a VBAC. And she's like, you had a H-back. She goes, you didn't have a V-back. She's like, you pretty much had a free birth. Like you
seriously,
did. Like obstetrician or midwife or anybody. It was just, and it was, yeah, it was, someone said, well, how did you know? Like you didn't have any exams. Like you didn't know how far along you were. Who delivered the baby? I was like, I did. I did it all. Like it was just so, so unplanned, but so perfect the way that it happened. And I just, even my mum was like, she's like, I don't think you're ever going to get off. Like I was just on cloud nine for so long. I think that's going to be forever. Like I just don't think it will ever change. And I think it's so special after having a cesarean. I don't think it's the same.
There's something about it for sure.
It is. And it's, I think only someone that's had a cesarean can relate to just not thinking you can do it or not being able to do it and then actually being able to do it. And I remember in your podcast, I think after your birth, you say something to your obstetrician, like, I don't have a small pelvis or I did it, or there was mm-hmm. something that you wish you could have said afterwards yeah. to them.
And I might have said, screw you, my yeah. name.
And I just remember thinking,
I did it.
Yeah, what's a small pelvis? I was like, I can push a baby out, and
yes.
it's so empowering. And I just literally, I think I even posted it in the VBAC Link community, and I remember all the comments. People were like, never stop telling your story. They're like, people need yeah. to hear more positive, yes. good outcomes of birth, because you don't hear about that. You just hear about all the scary things. And yeah, it should. So I just, I'm like, every time somebody asks, I'm like, are you ready for that? Because I'm going to tell you the full. I was like, I will keep talking about it, and I will love talking about it, because I just think it's something that should be heard and experienced by women if they want to. Like, obviously it's completely your own choice, but right. if you want to, you should be able to try and have a VBAC. And I think it's just such an incredible experience, and I'm so glad to share my story, because I wouldn't have been, I honestly don't think I would have thought that I could have done it or been possible without listening to the stories that you had yeah. on your podcast, because it just gives you so much, I don't know, that it's possible that you can do yeah. it, and people do it all the time. It's not, yeah, I remember yeah. something like people didn't even know what VBAC was.
And oh, like, yeah.
can you have a VBAC? Yeah. Are you allowed to have a VBAC? And I'm like, it's just such a funny concept now. I'm just like, yes, it I will tell. And everyone, I'm like, if they're having a private midwife, I'm like, oh, maybe just have a look at your options. I mean, a private obstetrician, not a midwife. Right. But yeah, I just find it. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
You know,
I could go on and on.
So. And there's, I know, and there's so many times that we doubt ourselves, right? We doubt ourselves. Yeah. We get in our heads, and it's because we've been told those things, and we've been made to feel like we're not able to. And then on top of that, we have things on our op reports like CPD or failure to progress, or we've got a special scar now, so she should definitely never do this. And now she's got gestational diabetes on top of this. So then we've got a bigger baby, right?
And
when it's in all said and done, look at you.
Like, and that's what I remember thinking. None of that even came up at the end of the day.
Yes.
None of that. That was such a high risk and issues to be scared of. And at the end of the day, none of it, even the paramedics, we didn't tell them I'd had cesarean.
Yeah, they just were like,
is there any medical history? And then afterwards, she was like, after they were like, oh my goodness. That, but I was like, but it wasn't scary. It shouldn't have been scary situation. But I think and I understand there are situations where it can be, but I was like, but the fact that there was none of that, and you get it all in your head and you think, I can't do this. You've heard all these things. But I do think I was so much more mentally prepared for this birth than I was my second birth. And I think that was a huge difference, being in your head and believing that you can do it as well.
Absolutely. I echo that completely. And then to kind of add, I know you added some like books to recommend and things like that. So another one that I would recommend is The Real Food for Gestational Diabetes by Lily Nichols. Ooh. So that's a really great one. So if you're listening and you have had gestational diabetes in the past, or you were just maybe diagnosed, this is a really, really great book for gestational diabetes parents. And just thank you so much for recording with us today, or tonight in your sense, or actually in the morning. It's now 12:15 in the morning. And oh my gosh, your story is amazing. And I agree. Do not stop sharing it, because that was true physiological birth. Like,
that was everything.
Just complete. And there are so many things about your story, right? Like, that from like, okay, I'm now on the toilet and I have to go all the way down to get the door unlocked. But like those things actually were probably helping your situation and helping your baby. And so keeping these things in mind, women of strength, like during labor, walk, crawl, whatever, you know, move through your labor, because it really can help impact the way your baby comes down. So thank you so much again for sharing your story. Congratulations. And I hope that you have an amazing sleep tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me share. I love everything that your community that you've created has done. I think it's just, I'm so glad I found it because I definitely attribute my births to that. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.